Accession number 9535, Reel 2.
Mr. George Cole, Reel 2. You were saying conditions improved at Lowfell School while you were there. Can you tell me something about how they improved?
Well, when they got some French guns, and we had to deal with them, and then gradually got horses in that day. And anyway, not long after that came on board, he called home one morning, we were getting our breakfast. Mr. Hornsby, the officer, and he shouted out, everybody here, can't know he's staying here, so he called the different men's names out, and eventually come to mine, and the same questions, are you 19 years of age? Yes, sir. He says, are you 19 years of age? I says, yes, sir. He says, you're a bloody liar. He says, I know you're not, but anyway, because the date they before that, we'd been out what a road march, eh? A place called Dickie's Den, as Gates said. And were on talking about Hedges, and he was on the Hedge. He was a colony manager's son. And we both knew we were on the Hedge, see? So he knew that. But anyway, he says, have you been a knuckle twice? Yes, sir. Right over, see? Put that down. And eventually, about 60 of us was picked out. And we had to go out as first reinforcements to the original brigade. That's the 252 brigade, eh?
Before we come back, can I just ask you a bit more about the training? You say you did some training with the guns. What did that involve?
French guns. There was French guns. All you trained with was supposed to be getting into action. And they couldn't fire. There was no ammunition. They had the wagons. No, all you were handling ammunition wagons. That's the only difference. And I had very little on that because we were picked out, and we went up there at Shellyfield Mission Rooms, and by ourselves, about 50 or 60 of us, say. And we were a week or two there, and I remember we were there when the Second Battle of Ypres started, and that's when they had the casualties, and we were drafted straight away then from there to France.
So you didn't get much training?
You got no training at all.
Just the route marching and
just route marching and such as that.
Had you been trained as a signaller yet?
No.
So
at Lambert, you know, I saw the signallers and practicing with the flags. But anyway, when I went to France...
Do you know the date you went to France?
Yes, the 7th of July, 1915. And... I marched down to Southampton, and from Southampton down to the board, and we landed off the French coast somewhere at night, like say. But anyway, we found out we were at the mouth of the river, and the boat went right up the river to Rouen, and a lovely Sunday morning, people waving to us on the shore, like on the side. And anyway, we got off the ship, Rouen, and they were marching away to different places, and a whole batch was marching on. And we got, half a mile away, and a fella come flying up on a motorbike. And he stopped us and talked to whoever was in charge, and about turn. So we marched back, and we went aboard the boat again, see. Oh, we're all saying, well, the war must be finished, and then we're not going to get a chance to see it now. So anyway, the boat went back down the river, and the next morning we landed at Le Havre, and it went up to the camp at Half Law, and we were there at Half Law a few days or so, and we went back up to the line, see, and to join the brigade. And anyway, me and a few more was detailed off to to join the first battery, see. That was the same battery, originally the same battery, see. And we were lined up outside the battery office, and the sergeant major, he was calling the roll out, calling the names out. He says, have you done anything much on a gone call? I said, I've only seen one once. And what happened, while they were at Lowfell the first time, before they went to France, they had an accident, and one of the men was killed at Lowfell, and he belongs to him. And they brought the gun carriage through for the military funeral. And we saw that in the drill hall. And that's the only time, and if some of us went to the funeral, see, and that's the only time I really saw an actual gun, see. And the remarkable thing was that that same gun that came for the funeral was the same gun that I fired first. In the same battery, see. But anyway, he says, I've done much of the gun. I says, no, I said, I've only seen one once, and I tell him about the one coming for the funeral. He says, can you ride a horse? I said, I'll ride a pit gallop, that's a pit pony. He says, I mean riding a bloody saddle. I says, no, I said, never been in the saddle, sir. He says, do you know anything about sailing? I said, signaling? I didn't know such a thing. He said, what are you called for? I said, we've come out to win the war. And that's the training we had. And anyway, I went on the gun, see. First of all.
So you were put on as a gunner?
Put on as a gunner. I went up, and the first time I went up was at Oaklands in front of Harmon Tears. I remember going up with the guns had gone up with a night in the battery. Had gone up a night or two before, and me and a few more was being took up. And I remember walking through Armand Tears, some of the houses burning and slates dropping off and the sort of. I thought myself, this is what I know. But then it wasn't so bad. Like I got up to the position at Oaklands, and I went on the sea gun, Sergeant Dawson.
Sea gun. So it's first battery, sea gun.
First Dunham battery, C subsection. Regimental number 2141. That was the original territorial number, see. And anyway, I was on this gun.
What did they think of you when you arrived and you didn't know what you were doing on this gun?
Why, everything. I didn't know the first thing about the gun, I tell you. All I knew to put the shell in, see. And Nicol Taylor, he was the gun there. They were all local. All the old battery was local people from the same. You knew everybody else, see. Neighbours and worked with one another pit. It was the same battery, see. And so I wasn't among strangers, see. And anyway, Sergeant Dawson, he says, he says, we're going to learn you as much as possible, see. And instead of doing odd jobs about when there was any firing, I was on the gun floor with Nicol Taylor. That was the gun leader, see. There was EML, he was always on the gun floor. And he gave me a crash course. He was learning, you know, he's talking to me and learning. I learned more of him in a week than someone learned in 12 months. But he did everything, see. And I got on, and anyway, I got on point, fuel set down. Number two, that's the bridge, loading. Did them all. Then when the Lowe's battle started in September, we were getting ready for the Lowe's battle. We didn't take part in the Lowe's battle, but they did a bit of action like that, a bit divert, diverge, jelly stuff that now, see. And he says, come on, Cole, he says, get on the seat, number three seat. Come on, Nicol, he says, let Cole have water. And I looked up and I said, oh, that's sad. He says, come on, he says, get on number three seat here. He says, you can open out. And they opened up with a salvo, see, where I knew with a salvo was fired together. And when they shot, I fired those. And I had such a quiet feeling. And Dawson said, he says, are you all right? I says, aye. And I had a feeling, I thought, perhaps I've killed somebody. And that's the first thing that came in mind, that I fired the gun and perhaps killed somebody now, eh? And that was the, I believe it was in September, and I went there back to Lowestrat, and that was the day I fired out, first actually fired a shell, say. And the signaller's dugout was just behind Old Gorn. And I used to pop in, and I used to watch them all with a buzzer, and they talk to them, and they say, got cute. And I took a fancy to learn the signal, see. And I was always back and forth among them, learning, picking the Morse code up, see. And that's how I'm going to be a signal, see.
Before we go on, how overall had you reacted to the army life then, and the lack of privacy and the discipline? Did you find it difficult, or did you take to it?
Someone or other wasn't fetched up under the discipline at home. In the pit, there was more discipline there. In everyday life, even at school, there was no discipline, see? And I think you took to it naturally, see? But, and more so, I think what happened that your sergeants and your corporals and everybody at the first was your own local people, see? And you got on well with it, see? And the real discipline come to you. Because I remember one time we were at Oak Lines and with his sandbagging. And he used to say, it was a comical saying, every sandbag you feel is a day long that they'll live. And anyway, we had an officer come there, and he was a regular officer, Bushel they call him. And he was always calling those Saturday night soldiers, that was a skit, see. So anyway, as it happened, one night I was on sentry, and a lad belonging to him, Scotty Reid, he was on the right section, I was on the left section, as the postman was coming, see. So, Scotty May was on, and our second battery was way on the left, see, and we heard this bushel bid the second battery officers good night, and it was pitch black, see, he couldn't say anything, and the officer's dugout was in a little bank side to the left of Old Gorns, see. So I said, that's bushel. Scotty raised me, he was talking together. I said, that's a bushel. I said, wait till he comes. So, anyway, when I heard him come, read towards where he's doing. You couldn't see him, but you knew he was there. I said, halt, who goes there? Oh, he said, it's all right, Gunner. It's all right, Gunner. Halt, who goes there? I said, it's all right, Gunner. It's all right, Gunner. See? So I pulls the ball back and rams around at the boss, see? Halt, who goes there? Friend, advanced friend, we recognised. So I let him come up so far. Scotty Reid took off then, say, halt, who are you? He says, Lieutenant Bushel. I said, give the password, Lieutenant Bushel. You say a password every night, say. He gave the password. Password, all's well, say. Sent you on the right section. Yes, sir. He said, I'll go over there. So everything went according to plan with Scotty. Challenged him, really. So I believe he thought he'd catch me on, see. So when he's coming back, halt the wars now. Left hand and bushel, see. Pastor, all's well. See. He said, what the call you, sentry? I said, good call, sir. Oh, he said, good night, sir. So away he went. So the next morning we're busy out on sandbagging, see. And he comes upon the scene and he says, Sergeant, he says, who's going to call? Sergeant doesn't tell me this after, say. He says, that's him over there. So that, he says, that young brother? I was only 18. He says, shout him over, say. So I showed him me and I went over. Stood at attention. He says, you on Sunday last night, call? Yes, sir. He says, did you know who it was when you challenged at first? Yes, sir. I heard you bid the officers good night. He said, what were you going to do? He said, the third time when you put the round in. I said, I'm going to have a lap at you, sir. I was that much in Leon and Saul, you see. And everybody burst out laughing. He says, you what? I said, I'm going to have a lap at you. He says, where are you going to fight? Yes, sir. I said, I'm going to fire. He said, you knew who I was? Yes, sir. What are you going to fire for? Well, I says, if we're only Saturday night soldiers, if we're only Saturday night soldiers, sir, we still know how to go on. And he says, well done. He says, always bear that in mind, see? And unbeknownst, the old sergeant major walked up while it rained. He heard everything went on. And late on the afternoon, he showed to me across. He says, come on, he was an alumni, but he was like the father of the battle. He used to come and train them, you know, see? He said, call himself, very proud of you. And he didn't like these bushmen there, because he used to call them Saturday night soldiers, see? And the sergeant major, mate, we got on famously for the rest of that.
What was your sort of, while you were in the hoop lines and round and about, before Loose, what was your sort of daily routine like? Can you remember?
The what?
Your daily routine. How would you spend the day? What sort of job?
Well, we didn't deal with it. You used to sandbag them and this, that, and that. And, of course, when I first went in, the gold pits we had, it rained 2 days after it stopped rain outside, it just branches the trees over, see? While we strengthened the gold pits and this, made them habitable, see? And they used to be here. Every day, there was a gun on duty. That was the routine, see? There was always one gun on duty. And a man in a gun pit, the gun loaded. And it was regular, might get twice a day. All of a sudden, they'd get a gun, shout out from the sailors, fire the test, see? And you see, formally fire. The gun was laid on a certain spot, I said, you see. And it was a test, how many seconds elapsed before giving the order from the trenches to the shell drop, to see if you're on the alert, you know, see? And I remember one day, I'd washed a shirt. There's a big tree trunk in front of our gun. And you went and put nothing up, a flap of boat, see? So I'd washed, I'd laid it out on this tree trunk to dry, see? And I just turned away and somebody showed fire the test. And he said, that no gun was on test. And that's the last I saw me shared. the blast of the gun fire took a shot. It was in ribbons, see? And we were there for a few weeks, and then we come back. Because at that time, they were limited to ammunition. You weren't allowed to fire unless it was a force push, see? And it was, they were all Boer War guns, 15-pounders, see? So the ammunition they had, just like they had in stock, there'd be no new made, see? So then they were pulled out of there.
How was the battery position organised? Were they always the same? Battery position, you know, how it was organised, where the officers were and where you were and the billets.
Oh, they're off. There's your four guns, one till Singapore and camouflage. And it's just, then there, the forward observing officer, for who, if he used to spot any, say, a German working party or something like that, well, they used to fire at that, like, say. But it was there. I could have stopped there the rest of the wife. It was a cushy job, that part, quite
what like. What were your billets like? Yeah. Did you have dugouts?
Oh, a dugout. At first time, there were, there was no cover at all. I remember one night, I went to sleep, and I sat me back up against the wall, on the wagon wheel. They used to push one of the wagons up, back it up. And I was sat me back against the wheel, and we waterproof shade on my feet, and my feet was on the trail of the gun, and I went to sleep out in the rain was taming down, and of course I don't know, I was dry enough, and Darson tells us after that he come round, he's all his sadness, I mean he come round and he lifted up and saw me lying asleep like that. But when we had them kind of waterproof like and improved them, and at certain times there was it was supposed to be on the railway, there was the Germans had an armoured train, and he used to fire into a certain corner. He used to fire, maybe it was a couple of rounds, and figured, oh, get up and
So where did you move from Hoop Lines?
I went from Hoop Lines. We pulled out there all together, see, and I went back to, you know, getting the theatres, beyond Bayol, beyond there, and then they went from there, and they took the guns away, the old guns.
The 15-pounders.
15-pounders, and handed them in, and came back with 18-pounders, see.
What did you think of that changeover? Was it for the good, or...?
Oh, it was wonderful, compared to the... You see there, 15-pounders, you have to put the shelly in first, then put the cartridge in after, then put a T-tube in, and all the time, see, why, the 18-pounders, why everything went in together, see. Booker, Arnia, everything, see. And then went away from there, and it went into action at Ypres, you see.
What was the approximate date of that? Can you remember?
Big part?
What was the approximate date you went to Ypres?
Well, when the, I think that as near as I can say, when they went into Ypres, would be about the back end of November, see.
1915.
1915, see. Because we were in there on Christmas. In fact, we were in there for the Christmas.
Where did you set up your first position?
At the position, well, there was only one position there. It was on Shrapnel Corner. That was on the little road, laying out the little road. Shrapnel Corner, and it was a street of houses and bin houses, and the guns was in there firing through the what had been the back end of the houses, you know, see. And our target was up on in Sanctuary Wood area, see.
What sort of billets or dugouts did you have there? Do you have any shelter?
Well, there was just a house, a room in a house, and then a dugout built in the room, sandbags up like a bit of a shelter, see. And so you were in the, we were actually in the houses, of course, slates and everything off. They wanted waterproof, you know, see. The houses were just camouflage, see. And it was fairly quiet. Oh, the time over there, the Major Gothi, he was a German. He belonged out in Paul. And he was killed in a Shrapnel Corner, him and Bushell. And Lieutenant Lindley, I was talking on the Dr. Sheldon. Bushell was killed. The Major was killed. Bushell was wounded. And I remember Mr. Lindley, and he had the peak of his cap. We hadn't got the steel helmets there, see. The peak of his hat was not cut right off. And he had a nice squeak.
So the Shrapnel Corner...
That was on Shrapnel Corner.
There wasn't that much fire, despite that incident. There wasn't that much fire on it at that time.
No, but in Turpner, we were across and unveiling the memorial in 1929. And the Chatterbang there then, you know. And after the unveiling ceremony, we had the tower on the Ypres salient. And he took us from Ypres. There was a hotel close to the Menangier Memorial where we had a meal. And then we went for a tour around. And we went along the Lille Road to Shrapnel Corner. And this interpreter said there was a hambridge of four men and deer killed on Shrapnel Corner. And on the corner, it was just a road laying out to the left. And that led up to what they call Transport Farm. And then there was near Zillibeck Lake, and on to there, the Zillibeck village was on the right hand side, then away from there up to Sanctuary Wood, the trenches up there. So. And that's where I started the single, in earnest, like, see.
How did that come about? You told me you got keen on it, but.
Before?
You told me before you got keen on it, you know.
Yeah,
you
I got keen on it, and then I got over there. One of them, he said, do you fancy? I says, I fancy having a go. So I got on to it, see. And I was up in Sanctuary Wood, and Tandy McDeard and Ornsby, he was the FO who I was forward on the drills officer. And I remember one day, Jerry was strapping out trenches, and Mr. Ornsby was asking for retaliation, the infantry asking for retaliation. And Miss Dornsby was talking to the major. Well, it was Milburn's acting major then, because Goethe had been killed. And I'd watched the saber on me hair, say, and Miss Dornsby had answered, talking to the major. And he says, well, he says, you know, the talk about the ammunition, they're restricted to ammunition, I say. And as much as you can do without the help, say. And all of a sudden, he bang, and he hit the room, a shell hit the dugout, and Audrey was knocked down. I was already sitting down, I say, and knocked the top off the dugout, and Audrey fell, and all commotion and stuff. And the major said, I know Audrey, he'd heard the bang, but I couldn't speak because I was on the phone now. And the major kept saying, Hornsby, Hornsby, Hornsby. And at the finish, I got pulled around and he picked it up. I said, yes, he says, I'm here. He says, what's the matter? He says, he's knocked the bloody top off the dugout. He said, and directed on the dugout. We're escaped all day, like. That was in Sanctuary Ward.
What training did you have? How were you picked as a signaller? How were you picked out as a signaller? When did you actually start doing it?
Oh, yeah, I did. I went in and showed them where the buzzer, and it went on no cost, nothing. And I just picked it up, and I thought I would never learn to read it, you know, I say. And the dots and dashes, you know. And the finish had come to us, and I could get 16 words a minute once at the finish.
So you had no formal training?
No proper training, see.
What was it like in... You were often in the forward observation post?
Yes, right? you used to go in the observation post, and then you were repairing lines, and then you were battery duty, and then...
You'd take them one by one. What was it, forward observation post duty? What would you do there?
That was... sometimes you used to man it continuum, see. And if the infantry want any retaliation, that the guns, they used to come and say, and get us retaliating, and say, or else, when the officer used to be looking out of the lines, put a new work part, anything like shooting at them, and they go at them, say. And Jenny had two signals with the officer, say, one on the phone, another one with the officer looking out. Right, I got the finish, I could, as keen as him looking out, and so, you know, say.
You used phones, did you? Not you had actual telephones.
Yeah, you used a telephone, or you used the Morse key now, see? Yeah, you used to always call one up with a Morse key, out of the call sign. The first call sign we had was ANCAC. ANCAC. Dot, da, 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 da. ANCAC, I still remember that from 1915.
And what sort of phone did you have?
Big
what? What sort of phone was it?
Well, it was a little handset. There was a buzzer, little Morse buzzer, and it worked off batteries. Sorry. And then you had a handset. And you had to, before you spoke, you had to press what they call a pressure switch. And then there was a little watch receiver you put on your head. So that meant if you were writing a message down, you had both hands free, you know what I'm saying?